Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. I'm not used to sitting over here. I'm in a new seat. I forgot to turn my mic on. This is the Minnesota Beer Cast, Friday night, every Friday night at 8 o'clock. You can join us or anytime via podcast from TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com or iTunes or Stitcher or MinnesotaBeerCast.com, all sorts of places that you can find the show.
We're everywhere, man.
We're everywhere. I am Drew. You can hear me on Justice and Drew every morning. I wasn't ready for you yet.
See, this throws me off.
I know, right?
In the booth.
I'm usually not sitting across from you like this.
It's all right.
I've never been in this seat before.
How's it feel?
It's weird. I am Drew. You can hear me every morning on Justice and Drew 6 to 9. That's my co-host, Schmitty, from mnbeeractivists.com.
Yeah.
Now you can talk.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
It's a professional show.
Right.
We got a big show on tap for today, and we're also going to be next week's show. We're going to be recording some segments from Winterfest.
That's right.
Which is happening tonight out at Target Field. We're there right now while you're listening to this.
If you're listening to this and you're there, come say hi.
Right.
Oh, wait. Why would you be listening to this while you're there?
So next week's show is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be all segments from Winterfest. But we got a big show on tap for you today.
We do. We've got Kevin Welch from Boom Island Brewing, and we've got lawyer extraordinaire Jeffrey O'Brien in the house. And I think we're going to have Drew Christensen call it at one point as well, sitting representative of the Southern Metro area. So it should be a fun show.
Yeah, it should be a fun show. It's been a big week for you, man.
It's been a real big week.
Big week for you. Do you want to do a recap?
Why don't we wait till we have Representative Christensen on, and we'll do that. Why don't we start with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien? How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, you've got a lot of stuff happening. Why don't you? You got a book coming up.
I've got a full glass. Yes. I've got a book working on a book called Brew Law 101, the Minnesota edition. I'm co-authoring it with an attorney friend out of San Diego named Candace Moon, who's known as the craft beer attorney. She did a book similar to this for California about 2 years ago. And so, we're taking her manuscript that she did out there and we're going to adapt it to Minnesota. So as I say, we have a cover and it's halfway done, which means I haven't started writing my part yet, but it's going to be a nice practical guide for anybody that is starting a brewery. They can go through and follow through everything from, you know, you're forming your entity to your trademarks, to your TTB, to your state licensing, to your tap room, raising money, leases, all that stuff is going to be encompassed in the book. So I'm looking forward to getting rolling on the thing and getting going.
What do you think is going to be the most valuable part of the book that, wannabe brewers, for lack of a better term, are going to find useful? Is it going to be the
chapter on how to make your beer taste good?
the contact information for the author to call him and retain him to do your work. No, I think what it's going to show is that there are a lot of legal issues that go into starting up and operating a brewery, and it's not just in the early stages of life. You start hiring employees, and filing more trademarks and doing distribution and all those things. It's not something that you want to go about doing it yourself. LegalZoom doesn't make a good brewery lawyer. and trying to navigate it yourself just to save a couple bucks ends up causing bigger messes down the road. I always say that DIY usually leads to SOL. So I think
you could save a couple bucks now, but you're going to end up costing yourself a lot more money in the future.
Exactly. Exactly. I've got somewhere I lost track, but it's somewhere between 50 and 60 craft beverage clients mostly breweries, but some distilleries and cideries too. You know, I see these issues over and over and over again. So, someone may be dealing with something for the first time. I may have seen it six times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of, there is a value in what we do.
And also, I'm sure there's a lot of pitfalls that people don't think about that you have seen, and you can give them a heads up on, hey, you know, before you do this, you need to do this. Otherwise, these bad things are going to happen.
Absolutely. That's a great point, Drew. And, you know, when it comes to the state licensing, there's so much that is not written down in that statute and is left for interpretation. And you have to have contacts with AGE, and I do, fortunately, that will tell you how they're interpreting things. So, you know, if you want to, well, can I do this? Well, no. So it's a weird statute. It's an interesting. It's a different way the how the state looks at this one as if it doesn't say it, you can't do it, and you got to dig through it. You got to pick their brain sometimes to figure out what the nuances are, to figure out how far are they going to let you go with the language that's there in terms of who can own what and what you can do with your as a licensee.
Now, if you've got somebody, say, that maybe has a background in opening businesses or a background in maybe opening even like restaurants, are there nuances when it comes specifically to opening a tap room, a brewery, or whatever, a brew pub, that are unique to that industry?
Absolutely.
That someone who maybe has opened a bunch of restaurants might not even consider?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you know, give you a couple examples. Of course, the prohibition of who can own a interest in a licensee in the manufacturing tier. You can't have an interest in a wholesaler. You can't have an interest in a retailer. You don't have that with a lot of other businesses. You don't have those kinds of restrictions in terms of saying someone can't own something because they have an interest in some other business. Another example with the tap room law in Minneapolis, their tap room license, if you want to transfer controlling ownership in your business, you have to actually get the city council to approve it. And they make you write that into your documents. Mm. So that's a little bit unique too.
Sure.
You know, not every business, not even a restaurant, has to do that. It has to do with, you know, the liquor license, and they want to make sure that you aren't applying for it and then transferring it to somebody else.
So, somebody that maybe wouldn't be allowed to have it.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly right. So there are some interesting, there's some nuances. I have clients that I do everything for. I have some that I only do some liquor specific issues for. But yeah, it's going to be, like I said, I'm looking forward to getting it done and getting it out there and having people be able to use it as a resource.
Odd question. This is something that just popped in my head. With as many craft breweries and local tap rooms and things like that that have popped up around the country in the last several years, how often are you running into like trademark or branding issues?
Well, hopefully we aren't running into them because, you know, one of the first things we do is we run a clearance on the name, whatever they want to do. And it can be frustrating for a client because they come in with a name and they have a whole story behind it. And it's, you know, the business plan is based on it. It might be that even some of the beers that they want to brew are based on this concept. And then you find out, hey, there's a winery out of Australia that has a trademark here in the U.S. and it's going to get bounced because
right.
of the, it's right. It's the same name as what you've got because the trademark office looks at all liquor marks the same. Mm-hmm. Spirits, wine, beer, and if there's something, it doesn't matter if it's
right.
if there's not no
if
other
there's
beer that has it.
Drew's Wine,
then yep.
in Oklahoma,
yep.
You know,
then,
and I want to do Drew's beer.
Drew's Brewery is not going to fly,
yeah.
right. So we try to do those name clearances up front, so that we don't have a problem. If we do have them, we deal with them. You know, that's the nice thing. You know, just like the industry is very collegial, the law firms in this area, at least, that are representing these businesses are very collegial. We all know each other. And if there's an issue, we're usually on the phone trying to figure out behind the scenes how to get something fixed and how to make everybody happy. And so you don't see a lot of – you occasionally will see one of these disputes rise to the surface in public as a cease and desist or a lawsuit or something. But for every one of them that you see there, there's probably 10 to 20 that we resolve behind the scenes.
Nice.
Yeah. It's funny you bring up the whole naming thing. I know – there have been people who, you know, I'm sitting in my garage brewing beer with my three buddies and you know, we're thinking up a brand and all the beers that go along with it and the name and you spend 4 years in the garage thinking it up.
Right.
And then you hire Jeff and realize, oh.
Yeah, I crush your dream.
Oh, crap. I thought that was perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny, though. I mean, part of your job is to be the bearer of bad news.
Yep.
You know, that's got
to
be.
Well, I always say that we're, you know, lawyers are trained to have a dark sense of humanity. You know, already we're trying to figure out, when we negotiate a contract, we're trying to figure out who's going to screw our client and how we can prevent it as much as possible. So we come in with that dark view already with
yeah.
the, you know, that Grim Reaper attitude.
What can go wrong?
Exactly.
I mean, that's your job. It's,
yeah.
It's to foresee what could possibly go wrong
right.
and the steps you can take to mitigate that risk.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to have you in to talk about, Jeff, was I came across a headline regarding Walmart and craft beer.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted your expertise opinion on it. Why don't you walk us through that story?
Yeah, I read the story myself. I pulled the – I have here the complaint. It's not very long. It's filed in Hamilton County, Ohio, and it's a class action based on some individual that bought beer at Walmart and behalf of himself and all others similar situated, which is what you do in a class action. And what he's arguing is – Walmart's getting in trouble here. They were selling a proprietary line of beers called under the name Trouble Brewing. Like it was a their own. It was exclusive to Walmart craft beer,
which isn't unheard of. I mean, you'd see the same thing with Trader Joe's and their Three Buck Chuck or their
Kirkland
their
to beer Costco. Series.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Well, what happened was there was no brewery called Trouble Brewing. Now, that's not a big shock because we all know there's contract brewing out there. And I mean, I represent some breweries that have are a name that it's just a name that you're using and someone else is brewing the beer. Not a big issue. What happened here was Walmart was using Hennessy to actually brew the beer. And that was their contract brewer. And they were laced, you know, they had this Trouble Brewing label. So this individual is suing, saying that, well, that's not that Hennessy doesn't qualify as a craft brewer under the Brewers Association standards. So you shouldn't be marketing it as craft beer and selling it for the price you were. And that's the sum and substance of the lawsuit. I don't think this is going to go very far. I mean, to be arguing, you know, consumer liability to consumers based on the Brewers Association standards of craft beer, I don't see a judge in Hamilton County. I could be wrong, but I don't see a judge in Hamilton County, Ohio, buying into this one.
Yeah, I mean, so from what you're saying, the Brewers Association definition of craft beer is not a legal definition.
Right.
And that'll get it tossed.
Yeah, because the Brewers Association, look at it, it's craft brewing is small, so under 6 million barrels produced per year, independent, so less than 25% owned or controlled by a non-craft brewer, and traditional, making traditional beers, not flavored malt beverages, alcoholic sodas, or other products.
This is not unique to the craft beer industry, though. I mean, a lot of foods are very specifically defined. Like, you can't call something...
If it's not from Champagne, France, you can't call it champagne. Well, otherwise, it's sparkling grape juice.
Right? One of the odder examples that I ran across recently was you can't call something mayonnaise...
Right, without eggs in it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So there was this sort of, I don't know, gluten-free or something, or vegan.
I think it's called Mirka.
I think it was vegan mayonnaise.
Can't call
it
baconaise if it doesn't have bacon.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. Yeah, but somebody was trying to make a vegan mayonnaise, and they couldn't call it vegan mayonnaise. Because it didn't have eggs in it.
Right.
Miracle Whip is not mayonnaise, and it's garbage.
Miracle Whip is basically how – I think how ISIS is funded through Miracle Whip sales.
Yeah, yeah. There's,
pretty
there's
sure.
been a couple exposés on that.
Pretty sure. That, yeah, yeah. It might be an alternative fact.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that'll do it for this segment. We will be back after this. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast.